Teaching is our passion. We at The Wall Street Skinny are proud to announce that we've joined the advisory board for the iConnections Funds for Teachers initiative, focused on supporting the Ron Clark Academy and its pioneering teaching methods. Through Funds for Teachers, iConnections is dedicated to empowering educators nationwide by providing access to RCA's professional development opportunities. Events are being organized in major cities throughout the year to fundraise and support this incredibly important cause. All proceeds from these events will be directly donated to the Ron Clark Academy, specifically to financially aid teachers so they can participate in RCA's groundbreaking training programs. Please click on the link in our show notes to register for an event in the city nearest you.
Hey guys, welcome back to The Wall Street Skinny with Kristen and Jen. I'm Kristen.
I'm Jen.
And today we're going to be doing something a little bit different. So we got some advice from David Friedberg, who, if you don't know him, he is one of the co-hosts of the All In podcast. And he suggested that it would be probably a good idea to break down some stuff that is going on in the markets. Because like we always talk about, there's a lot of things in the financial press that people don't freaking understand. Like I've been in this world for, 15 years and it's non-farm payroll Friday. And Jen, like, I don't really understand what the heck that is and why I care. So what we're going to do is talk about what's going on in the markets, what it means, and why you care.
If this is a spectacular failure, you can go blame David Friedberg because this was his idea and not ours. But we're going to give it a shot here. This is very intimidating because we're trying to do a 15-minute off-the-cuff episode here. We deliberately wanted to never be newsy because that is not our wheelhouse. But I do think that Dave had a great point that if we're teaching you all this stuff that is evergreen, it's fun to then give you guys a little bit of a way to apply that each week and clue you in on what's going on that you may be asked about in an interview, or you can listen to this on a Friday and go sound really smart at a cocktail party the next night if you want, or whatever.
I love how Jed always uses that. It's like, because people want you to talk about the markets at a cocktail party.
I must be at the most boring cocktail parties. Definitely don't come to a party at my house, guys. We're going to be talking about non-farm payrolls.
Okay, seriously.
So here's the skinny on this. All right. The first Friday of every month is the most important economic data release of the month for anyone who is in a markets-facing role. It is, like Kristen said, called the Non-Farm Payrolls Report. It's released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And every single economist on Wall Street will spend weeks coming up with their estimate of what that report will say about how many jobs were added to the U.S. economy. What's also included in that release is revisions to the prior months. And that's going to be really important. So just keep that in the back of your mind. And this release happens at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the first Friday of the month. And the markets tend to react to whatever that news is more than any other economic data indicator. Why? Because it directly pertains to the unemployment rate. And if you recall, our central bank, the Federal Reserve, has a dual mandate, okay? They need to promote growth and employment, and they need to control inflation through this one little interest rate, okay? So that's a big old task for them to do with just one little interest rate, but that is their dual mandate. Exactly. And so you get lots of inflation data throughout the month as well, whether it be PCE or CPI, and all of these are just different acronyms for measures of inflation. And those are very important to watch as well, because as we measure how inflation is either increasing or decreasing in the current environment, that's going to impact the likelihood of whether or not the Fed is going to take action by raising or lowering rates. We really only get a couple of key economic indicators that point to the employment side of that dual mandate every month. And that's why the non-farm payrolls report is so freaking important. Okay. There's other payroll reports that come out, but this is the most important one. All right.
You know what's so funny though? Like, this is what always confuses me, because it has the word farm in the name. I actually think of it as being like the farm payrolls. And it's basically like, it's not. It's like the payroll that is excluding
that. That's why the first word is not.
I know, but it's one of those things where it's like, don't think about a purple elephant. But then they put it in the name. It's like,
you're like, how many people are working on farms?
I know.
Like, now I'm really concerned about agriculture in America. Like, oh, that's really funny that your mind goes there.
I will ask really quickly, why are farm payrolls excluded? Like, why is that important?
I don't fucking know. Okay. I got to look that up. Hang on. Okay, so I Googled this.
Live on the air.
Yeah, live on the air. Again, I was not an economics major. So this is what Google tells me, that it would be too inaccurate and too expensive to try to count all the farm jobs. But I think, let's be fucking real here. Okay. Think about all of the laborers working in agriculture. How many of them are undocumented? How many are like, again, I've got my 10-year-old out there tending the sheep or whatever it is, right? Like
this is an example. Jen does not actually have her 10-year-olds out there taming the sheep. She also doesn't have a 10-year-old. So,
and this is pure supposition here, but I do think that because the agricultural industry in the US is so heavily subsidized by the government, that having farms be excluded gives you a much more accurate picture of what's happening in the economic drivers of the big GDP growth that we see versus things that are more controlled by the government, things like that. Okay, so here's what happens every non-farm payroll Friday. You get into the office. You better not be too hungover. Like, even if you went out last night with clients, whatever it is, you got to look smart. You got to look sharp. You cannot be late on non-farm payroll Friday, okay? This is the one day of the month you can never be late. We're going to talk about this in a bit. But you show up. And Bloomberg will display like what the consensus number is that everyone is expecting, right? And if that number is 100,000, right? Sometimes the actual number will come in and it'll be like 101,000. Sometimes the number will come in and it'll be like 50,000 or down 250,000. Sometimes the number will come in and it'll be up 300K. So where the number comes in relative to expectations is, generally speaking, what people are watching, because when the expected number is so widely telegraphed, markets are efficient enough that most people who think that that number is likely accurate will be positioned for a number of that magnitude and what that means for the likely course of central bank policy. If the number is a surprise in either direction, there might be then a mispricing inherent in the market that you will try to take advantage of. So, for example, if the expected number is 100,000 and it comes in that the economy added 300,000 jobs last month, that tells you that it is highly unlikely that we are about to enter into a recession. And all of the expected cuts of the Fed funds rate that had been priced into the year, coming into this week, we had something like 3 Fed cuts priced in starting in June. Then we had Fed speak on Wednesday indicating that there might not be any Fed cuts this year. And today we had a stronger than expected non-farm payroll report. So now many people in the markets are thinking that it is highly unlikely that the Fed cuts rates at all in 2024. And so if that's your thinking, how do you express that in the market? Well, if you don't think that front-end rates are going to be lowered, you might sell front-end rates. If you think that overall the economy is going to be stronger, you might buy equities. If you think that overall rates are going to be on a higher path, you might expect the dollar to be stronger. Things like that, right? So there's kind of the traditional macroeconomic theory and all of the different expressions of that. However, oftentimes, because these markets are so efficient too, you get a buy the rumor, sell the fact. So if the rumor and the Fed speak is that, ooh, like there's not going to be anything that happens this year. Like the Fed might even hike again this year, whatever. If that's what people are really talking about all week before the non-farm payroll number, and then it comes in strong, everyone may have actually already been positioned that way in advance of the report, and you'll get a really strong number and then rates will rally.
So it's just like the opposite. Yeah.
What just happened? That's the opposite of what you would expect, but it's actually more indicative of what positioning and what the general consensus was, even if the headline consensus number was something very different. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And just again, rates rally, right? Rates go down for the
rates go down. Yes. Yeah. Oh, don't even get me started. So when you hear most people who have an equities background or a non-rates background talk about the price action of the fixed income markets, they will try to explain it, but they're constantly going through that conversion in their head of price up, yield down.
Yeah.
So they will say things like yields will go up, rates will go down. This is not how rates traders speak. Rates traders use the term rally and sell off uniformly across all rates products, because think about it this way, right? If I'm talking about bonds and I say rally, I mean yields go down, right? Mm-hmm. What if I'm talking about swaps? Then when swaps go down in rate, you're not going to say that all day long. You're going to say interest rates rallied, right?
Yeah.
And so that is something that will actually out you as not being a rates person if you think that that is not how you use that lingo in practice. It's very awkward to say yields moved higher or, you know, yields inched lower.
Well, and I wanted to sort of just expand on one other thing that you said, which is if you expect that the Fed is not going to cut rates, right? Rates are not going to be going down and they're going to stay higher. How does this feed into your valuations, right? If you're on the other side, if you're a investment banker, well, now the discount rate that you might have expected is potentially now higher. And what does that mean? Those future cash flows are discounted at a higher rate, values down. So in theory, I would expect that the equity markets go down.
But because in reality, it's not just about the discount rate being higher. It's about the picture that it's painting about the overall economic landscape. So if the economy is adding tons of jobs and there's no likelihood of a recession, you want to buy riskier assets. You want to buy things that are going to perform when the economy is strong. So in theory, a strong payroll report should be a risk-on move and you should buy the equity market. People are not building a discounted future cash flow model to decide whether or not to buy the S&P intraday on non-farm payroll Friday.
No.
People are thinking about the overall global economic landscape.
This is fair.
Stronger U.S. economy is good for U.S. stocks. So it is about growth. It is not about overall discounted future cash flows. It's about the growth picture. And were rates to suddenly be expected to sell off 200, 300, 400 basis points, that might be a sticking point for companies' borrowing power. But at the margin, if rates sell off 10 basis points, no one gives a shit as far as your discounted cash flow model versus expecting GDP to rise by a percentage point year over year. That really matters for equities. So I totally hear what you're saying, but a Fed that isn't reacting in an emergency cutting mechanism to try to stimulate the economy because things are falling apart, right, tells you that things are really healthy right now.
Yeah, no, I totally that totally makes sense. It's just my understanding for the last year, I think, since the Fed started to have higher rates and then people were expecting the Fed to start cutting, that was actually fueling equities because they were like, oh, if the Fed starts to cut, that's a good thing. So the expectation of Fed cuts, even though, yes, it signals a recession, like that's not good, but lower rates mean lower cost of borrowing, which means you can then put money and you can invest more. So it's almost like a little bit counterintuitive.
No. That is a really great point as well. Because again, what the Fed has told us consistently over the past 15 years is they'll always be there. They have got your back. If things start to look bad, they'll cut rates.
Yeah.
And it used to be, okay, well, if things start to look shaky, we'll just talk about cutting rates and the market will start pricing in quantitative easing. And then everyone thinks it's back to the races of late 2020, 2021, or earlier, you know, a decade prior, right? When it was QE forever and you were just supposed to buy everything. So that is a very good point.
Yeah.
But there are kind of two reasons to have that massive risk on trade, right? I think we've talked about this earlier that, hey, listen, if you believe that the Fed is always going to provide accommodative monetary policy, that's what they used. They turned the regional banking crisis into a big risk on move, right? Because it was like, oh, things are absolutely terrible, but don't worry, we're going to cut. And everyone was like, oh, thank God, right? Like,
Well, it's one of those things where it's like it's capitalism on the way up and socialism on the way down, right? It's like you get to like take all your profits on the way up. And then as soon as things go badly, the government starts just like pouring money in and bailing out the people that are not doing so well. So
brilliantly
I do think that there's
a little bit
of that as well.
And this is what we talked about with Guy, that under both scenarios, it's kind of equities to the moon.
Yeah, exactly. So along with this point, we just talked about non-farm payroll Friday, what it is, and then like, why do you care? Here's the other thing. Jen, you were talking about how like you should never be late if it is a non-farm payroll Friday. Do not be hungover. And this actually ties into a really great question that we got on social media yesterday, which is like, how can I learn all of the unspoken rules that people don't tell you, but like you're basically just expected to know? And so we had asked a lot of you guys, like, what are some of the unwritten rules? And we had a few. And what we wanted to do is just actually go through a couple of them. So these are some takeaways for if you're trying to get up the learning curve and no one tells you some of these things, but you are expected to know.
But I also want to rant about this for just 2 seconds because here's the thing. Everybody expects to be handed a manual, right? They are called unwritten rules for a reason. You need to use your powers of observation and inference to draw conclusions about what you see around you. The idea that someone is supposed to now hold your hand and say, hey, listen, make sure to come in before your boss on the most important economic data release day of the month, that I need to put that in writing for you, is wild. You should be able to, if you have excelled so much in your life that you've managed, we know how hard it is to get one of these jobs these days. I could never get one of these jobs these days. I'm not qualified to mop the floors in an investment bank. I completely understand that. But I am qualified to read the unwritten social cues around me and interpret them. And so I would encourage you to listen. You can listen to us and we're going to clue you in on these things, but like, don't you dare ask your boss what the unwritten social rules are, okay? Or expect your boss to tell you these things. And this is kind of, it's all like, again, this is all part of the same feedback loop, right? But it's funny because true story, actually probably one of the biggest indicators that I was like thinking about quitting my job was the fact that I planned my wedding on a non-farm payroll weekend. I was like, well, our rehearsal dinner is on the first Friday of the month and I want everyone from the desk to come. And everyone's like, we don't know if we're going to be able to come. I was like, oh, too bad. Okay, bye. I'm not going
to
begin.
That's a good way to save some money on like the, on the steak, Jen. Less people showing up. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Although my boss did RSVP yes, and then never showed up. So a homeboy owes me for a steak and a lobster tail or whatever it was. Okay. But let's go through some of these unwritten rules. So again, we talked about non-farm payroll Friday. And by the way, if you have a friend in the industry and you try to text them or call them or email them at 8:29 on the first Friday of the month, be prepared to get your head bitten off because that's a no-no. So for those of you who are not in the industry, like little tip for the wise, if your partner is working on that Friday, don't be like, hey, honey, can you take the day off? Okay, what were some of the other ones we got?
There was a lot of good ones. I mean, look, some of the ones that were obvious that we had put out there were like email people in terms of seniority. So like the person that you put first should be the most senior and then it goes down in juniority. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a word, but it was funny because someone literally
recently, and I was like, I'm just going to lean into this.
I like it. We'll start using that word. But someone actually commented and they said, I've been on the floor for 3 months and I just learned this yesterday. So it's one of these things that people, again, like, but people
it
care.
It sounds like something they learned people the hard care. Way.
Yeah, maybe. Another little thing is like, if you're replying, thank you, actually write out thank you. If you are junior, the TY and TX is like kind of a show of disrespect. You will see your boss do it. Yeah, TKS. And it's kind of a sign of disrespect. Like if you do that, and by the way, like you're going to have people that are like, oh, this is stupid. Why do people care? People care. Like it's this a little thing. Like just you work so hard to get the job.
So much. My husband will text me. He doesn't – he's not too bad about the TY or TX, but he will abbreviate please as PLS, and that boils my blood. He'll be like, PLS, walk the dog. And I'm like, honestly, I would be less offended if you just said walk the dog. Right? Yeah. Because it's like, oh, I'm not worth your time to write out
the whole word.
The whole word, which by the way, your phone will auto-complete. This requires zero effort because obviously I'm your managing director in our house, right? So like, please.
Yes. John does the TY. John does TY. And it's like, oh my God. It's the same thing.
By the way, I had
like,
to answer a phone call from your husband yesterday. He was looking for you.
I know. He didn't even call me. He first messaged us on Instagram.
Okay. What else do we got? What else do we got?
Never make the same mistake twice, which is
that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Bring solutions to your boss. So basically, if you have a problem and something comes up, before you just go and say, hey, how do I handle this? Try to think through what the options are and say, this is my proposed solution. Do you agree? And they can say yes, they can say no. It shows that you're taking initiative. So go to your boss with a solution, not just the problem.
I think that's a really good one. And it speaks to another one we got about like, don't just ask questions willy-nilly. My second grader has a sign in his classroom that says, try three before me, right next to the teacher's desk. And it means like, try three different ways to get the answer you're looking for before you come to me. And to be honest, we see this on social media all the time. People will ask us a question and it's crazy because they're asking it in a public forum that I'm like, twere you to Google, you would get such a better answer than I am going to be able to give you in the comments section of a silly Instagram post. People need to have that self-sufficiency to be able to say, okay, I'm going to try to find this answer by asking the other, insert here, analyst, associate, junior person on the desk. I'm going to try to look it up on the internet. I'm going to try to go back and make inferences from this email and then go to your boss and say, This is what I think this means. Mm-hmm. Am I correct? Am I going down the right path here, or am I just wildly off course?
Yeah. Another one, Jen, you did a number of videos on what to wear, because we get this question mm-hmm. a lot from people. So you had basically shown just some options, and it, this started a whole dialogue. We need to do a whole like episode on like clothes yes, and work and wear. Fashion no, 100%. And all that. Yeah. But from someone who was very senior in HR and has worked at like a bunch of very high profile firms, she was like, look, dress appropriately, make sure you're not wearing things that are too low or too short. And also like look around and see what the convention is. So Jen, when you were at Lehman, you worked at a place that was business formal. Like mm-hmm. there are still firms that are business formal, which means that men need to wear a jacket. Like look around and see what other people are doing. This is where that power of observation comes in. And emulate what the people who are really successful are yes. doing.
And that's just a general guideline, right? Look around at the most successful people and say, what are they doing? And how can I adapt their strategies to mm-hmm. feel authentic to me and try to emulate them? Because you don't need to be exactly like them, right? You don't need to be like, where'd you get that dress? I'm going to go buy that dress. Yeah, yeah, I'm going to look exactly like you. I'm going to clone you. I want
to
wear your skin.
I do that to you. We do that to each other. We've like morphed into the same person.
Fine. We're basically indistinguishable from one another at this point, but it's not because of our wild success. but I really think that that's an important thing. And it's tough because we can sit here and bemoan like, oh, I really wish that everyone could just wear whatever they want and like not be worried about how people are going to react when you show too much skin. Someone messaged us and said, I was explicitly told not to wear clothes that were too form-fitting because it would be distracting to the other analysts. And I was like, well, there's nothing problematic about saying that. Like, Jesus, I can't believe someone said that. But there is kind of this unspoken rule of like, if your skirt is super, super short and your heels are super, super high, it's going to make you stand out and be noticed. Is that what you want to stand out for and be noticed for? And that's just human nature. And I think that that's something real. And I wish, you know, we can talk about the utopian theory of like, everyone should just think of you for your brain, but set yourself mm-hmm. up for success. Wear what makes you feel comfortable. Chances are that you don't feel your most comfortable in a 6-inch miniskirt and 6-inch heels going to work where you're sitting in a chair for 14 hours a day.
Right. Yeah. And the last thing, and I think this will be what we'll use to wrap this up, but approach conversations from a standpoint of service. So it's not so much like, what can you do for me, but what can I do for you? Like, be helpful. You are there to make your boss's life easier and yes, to learn and all those other things. And they will very much value that. And then ultimately, as you get more senior, then you're going to want to have the people who are starting to help you out. So I do think it's one of those things that you can set yourself up for success by, again, approaching conversations from that standpoint of service.
I freaking love that. Let's wrap it up. Again, if you hated this, blame Dave Friedberg. Shoot us your feedback at questions@wallstreetskinny.com if you like this kind of episode and want to hear more of it. Love you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.